You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty, and welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, November 12th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. So glad you can join us here for the next 2 hours of news, interviews, and information that you can use in your cannabis community from coast to coast and everywhere in between, from North America to all the continents on this globe. We won't stop until marijuana smokers reach equality with beer drinkers and cigar smokers. So glad you could join us. If you're a returning fan or a brand new listener, we're glad to have you here. We are independent marijuana media, completely supported through our sponsors and through our listeners, just about 50-50 on each of those. So if you'd like to join up, you can visit our website at 420radio.org. There's a donation button right at the top. You can do a one-time donation through PayPal or sign up for a VIP subscription that gets you access to the archives of our second hour, Toker Talk Radio, plus discounts in our 420 Radio shop. So check that out at 420radio.org. If you'd like to advertise your business, brand, or service on 420radio.org, check out the advertise link up at the top. We've got all sorts of new advertisers joining us every month, and we're happy to support those businesses that support independent marijuana media. Now, on today's show, we got all sorts of great content for you, including a visit across the pond all the way to Belgium today, or tonight if you're in Belgium, with Michael Deegans from the Belgium Mambo Social Club. They've got a whole social club set up out there in Europe. We'll talk to him about how the laws differ and what they're doing to end adult marijuana prohibition on the continent of Europe. So stay tuned for that at half past. And then at 45 past, we'll have time for a radical rant where Radley Balco in the Washington Post has pointed out the inhumanity of American incarceration. We'll take a look at some of the tragic stories out of our American prison system and why we're so excited about Alison Holcomb taking on the ACLU's new mission to end mass incarceration in this country. Also on the show today, we'll have a chance to go behind the headlines. Today, we're going to take a look at the New York Police Department. We reported on this yesterday, where Mayor Bill de Blasio's administration is calling for an end to low-level marijuana arrests, replacing them with summons instead. Gabriel Saya from the Drug Policy Alliance has some insight on that and why it might not be all it's cracked up to be. Stay tuned for that in Behind the Headlines right after the 420 Radio News. Also on the show today, an activist agenda piece. We got a short video from CNN where Drug Policy Alliance Chief Ethan Nadelman was against Kevin Sabet from Project Sam. And Kevin Sabet made a very interesting pivot on his position regarding marijuana legalization. We'll see if he sticks to that. But of course, we start things off with the 420 Radio News. We've got news out of the United Nations where they're very concerned about the U.S. allowing four states to legalize marijuana. The incoming governor in Massachusetts pledges to vigorously oppose the legalization of marijuana in the Bay State. A Rhode Island student is suing because of job discrimination over medical marijuana use. In Chicago, we've got some of the new statistics from their citywide decriminalization effort. And in Washington State, pot shop owners are fighting to just break even as the IRS and Washington State are taxing them to death. Then stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. In Toker Talk Radio today, we've got a great interview with Bobby Black from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, where he talks about the future of the Cannabis Cup now that there's more legal states. Gordon Green will join us with some music from Burning Spear. And we've got Ethan Nadelman's complete TED Talk. Oh, it's a good one. Stay tuned for that in Hour 2. It's all coming up on the Russ Melville Show.
Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, your ticket to Seattle Hemp Fest.
Hey, what's up? This is Killer Mike, one half of Run the Jewels, and I'm telling you, November 23rd through 27th, you need to be at Cannabis Cup. I did it last year, and I got so high, I can tell you what color Jesus's furniture is. I got so high, I kissed the sky twice. I got so much enlightenment, I know Buddha's last name. Do you feel what I'm telling you right now? The people are great. You don't have to search or call your sketch-ass dealer who won't call you back. You don't have to go lurking through the hood to find good smoke. You need to get out of the country. You've been sitting on your block too long smoking weed. Get out and have an adventure. See you at Cannabis Cup, November 23rd through 27th. Yeah.
Weejacated Talk Radio, replaying Mondays at 10 Pacific on 420radio.org.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Norman. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, November 12, 2014. Moves by some U.S. states to legalize marijuana are not in line with international drug conventions, the UN anti-narcotics chief said on Wednesday, adding he would discuss the issue in Washington next week. Quote, I don't see how the new laws can be compatible with existing conventions, end quote, Yuri Fedotov, the executive director of the United Nations Office on Drug and Crime, or UNODC, told reporters. Asked whether there was anything the UNODC could do about it, Fedotov said he would raise the problem next week with the U.S. State Department and other U.N. agencies. The International Narcotics Control Board, or INCB, has also said Uruguay's new bill contravened the 1961 Single Convention on Narcotic Drugs, which it says requires states to limit the use of cannabis to medical and scientific purposes due to its dependence-producing potential. The Vienna-based INCB monitors compliance with this and two other drug control treaties. Massachusetts Governor-elect Charlie Baker vowed to, quote, vigorously oppose, end quote, the legalization of recreational marijuana, even as he plans to move forward with the implementation of medical marijuana. Baker, asked about the issue in an interview with the Republican MassLive.com in Boston on Monday, said, quote, I'm going to oppose that, and I'm going to oppose that vigorously, with a lot of help from a lot of other people in the addiction community, end quote. Baker, a Republican, said many people dealing with addiction believe marijuana use is a, quote, significant first step, end quote, toward addiction to other drugs. Quote, there's a ton of research out there at this point that says, especially for young people, it's just plain bad, Baker said, end quote. Baker indicated that he will move forward with trying to get the medical marijuana dispensaries that were approved 2 years ago open. Quote, I think waiting is a bad idea. There are clearly people who are looking for Massachusetts to get its act together and move forward on this, end quote, Baker said. A graduate student has sued a Rhode Island textile company for refusing to hire her because she uses medical marijuana to treat frequent and debilitating migraine headaches. Christine Callahan, who is studying textiles at the University of Rhode Island, sued Westerly-based Darlington Fabrics Corporation and its parent, the Moore Company, on Wednesday. The Rhode Island chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union, which is representing Callahan, said it believes it is the first lawsuit of its kind in the state. Carly Iafrete, the attorney who filed the lawsuit for Callahan, said if employers are allowed to discriminate against medical marijuana patients, then its legalization would become, quote, an empty promise, adding, quote, people with disabilities simply cannot be denied equal employment opportunities on the basis of the type of medication required to treat their particular condition, end quote.
Chicago arrests for small amounts of marijuana were down 39% during the first 6 months of this year compared to the same period in 2012. There were 5,000 fewer arrests in 2013 than there were in 2011, and that 4,100 pot tickets have been issued in lieu of physical arrest since the new citywide decriminalization law took effect. Asked whether he believes the highly touted ordinance has delivered, Mayor Rahm Emanuel said, quote, "We've made changes. I want more police officers on the street, less officers arresting for minor possession of marijuana, and I don't think it's an accident that New York just adopted what Chicago did," end quote. Zoning Committee Chairman Danny Solis championed the ordinance in hopes it would put police officers on the street for thousands of additional hours to fight more serious crime. He was also hoping to avoid saddling Black and Hispanic young people with arrest records that would haunt them for the rest of their lives. Owners of pot shops in Washington state say they will be lucky to break even this year. Quote, "Everything is just going to taxes," end quote, said owner James Lathrop of Cannabis City in Seattle. Lathrop says Uncle Sam plans to take more than what is fair thanks to the federal tax code from the 1980s called 280E. It prohibits businesses selling a Schedule 1 or 2 drug, illegal or not, from deducting their regular business expenses. Quote, "So that's another 35% on top of everything else," end quote, explained Lathrop. In the Evergreen state, a tax of 25% is thrown at the producer, processor, and retailer. Quote, "That's ultimately an 85% compound tax," end quote, said Lathrop. All those taxes mean some retailers could be seeing more red than green if they don't set money aside. The extra cost is passed on to the consumer anywhere between $18 to $25 a gram. This has been your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, November 12th, 2014. I'm Russ Belville. 420 Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups.
The pistachio, green, natural, and available without prescription in all 50 states. He's fine.
If you're an adult who enjoys a good beer, there's a similar product you might want to know about. One without all the calories and serious health problems. Less toxic so it doesn't cause hangovers or overdose deaths, and it's not linked to violence or reckless behavior. Marijuana, less harmful than alcohol, and time to treat it that way. For more information, visit marijuanaissafer.org.
Приветствую! Меня зовут Дэнни Дэнко. Мы от журнала High Times приглашаем вас в Амстердам с 23 до 27 ноября, чтобы вместить ежегодный турнир Cannabis Cup уже 27 по счету. Там мы сравним множество будов марихуаны и гашиша из смежных кофешопов. Еще у нас там выставка табаров, семинары по выращиванию, ночные концерты и вручение премии за лучшие в мире сорты марихуаны. Билеты можно купить на сайте cannabiscup.com. Ждем вас!
Welcome back. It's 13 and a half after the hour here on 420 Radio. And today for Behind the Headlines, we want to talk about a story we brought you yesterday, how the de Blasio administration in New York City is calling for an end to low-level marijuana arrests, replacing them instead with a summons-only ticket. Now, just for some background on this, understand that New York State has been a decriminalized marijuana state since 1977. But the cops have been getting around this since the 1990s under a practice called stop and frisk. The idea behind it is that cops would frisk down often, most often, young Black and Latino men. And when they could feel a pipe or a bag of weed in their pocket, ask them to then
empty their pockets. These young people often don't know that they don't have to empty their pockets. They have a Fourth Amendment right against illegal police searches. So they often just empty their pockets. And then once the marijuana's in plain view, that's an arrestable misdemeanor. So it's been a trick that the New York Police Department has used to, at the top of the Giuliani administration, getting up to around 50,000 arrests per year under this. That was under Bloomberg, 50,000 arrests per year under Bloomberg. So typically, what would happen when someone got this possession in public view is they'd be handcuffed, they'd be taken to the precinct, they'd be held for however long it takes to get them fingerprinted and photographed, and then they would get transferred to a jail cell anywhere from a day or two, 24 to 48 hours, before they would then be brought before a judge. And if you've got a job, you know, being in jail for a day or two can cost you your job. It can have all sorts of consequences. So this has been escalating. It started around the time of Mayor Giuliani. It continued during Michael Bloomberg. And now with the de Blasio administration, the Marijuana Arrest Research Project has shown that the arrest pattern continues, despite de Blasio and the NYPD Commissioner Ray Kelly calling for an end to this and telling the police to stop this stop and frisk practice. Back in 2011, they tried to address this at the state level. The legislators in Albany proposed legislation to stop the arrest, but that never got anywhere at the state level. Oftentimes, these police unions, these prison guard unions and such, they lobby heavily to gum up the works, if you will, in a state legislature. So that never happens. In 2013, Bloomberg, as he was mayor, was announcing a change in the arrest policy. But what would happen is instead of they would still do the arrest, but they would process the person at the precinct and let him go with a desk appearance ticket rather than holding him in jail for a day or two and bringing him before the judge. So that's a nice change, but it wasn't good enough. We went from about 50,000 marijuana arrests in New York City in 2010 to about 30,000 arrests by 2013. So a great move. It's great that we have fewer arrests, but still far too many in a state that's decriminalized. So as he was running for mayor, Bill de Blasio called for an end to this arrest procedure that was going on in New York City. But again, the latest data show that nothing has really changed under de Blasio. So he finally has gotten so much pressure from activists and from the media that they made this sweeping announcement under 25 grams. They weren't no longer going to arrest. It was just going to be a summons ticket. But there's still some problems with this. And I wanted to point this out. This is Gabriel Saya. He's from the Drug Policy Alliance, and he wrote this in the New York Daily News. And he pointed out that there's still some significant problems that this does not address with respect to the racial disparity of marijuana enforcement in New York City. First, it does nothing to address the gross, unwarranted racial disparities associated with marijuana arrests in New York City. Right? They're still going to be enforcing these summons, these tickets, and so forth more heavily in East Harlem than they're going to be on the Upper East Side. So we haven't really changed anything with respect to that. Second, the policy does nothing to change illegal searches, the pat-downs, the stop and frisks. The stop and frisk now might lead to a ticket, might lead to and again, we're not talking about a decriminalization ticket where there's a civil offense and no fine. We're talking about a summons to appear in court on these charges. So it doesn't do anything to change the illegal search problem. And the policy may inadvertently hide the racial disparity in the enforcement, because data on marijuana arrests are reported through a centralized statewide system. We can get those numbers, but data on marijuana summons is, according to Saya, notoriously limited, and there is no effective reporting system. As the NYPD commissioner himself noted in this week's press conference, because of these limits, the public will now not know whether or not racial disparities persist in the summons as they have in the arrests. And that's disconcerting. And Gabriel points out what I would say about this. What they're doing in New York is literally the very least they can do with respect to this. I mean, it's good that they're ending the arrests, that there's no more handcuffs, no more fingerprints, no more mugshots, no more jail time.
That's great. But it just doesn't go far enough, especially in a city where there's overwhelming support for legalization. These are some of the inconsistencies we're going to find as some of these more reticent states are slowly lurching toward legalization. We're going to find these situations where they try to do things to make things better, and in some cases, they may actually make it worse. It's up to us as activists to work hard to create the political landscape where, at least by 2016, major blue states like New York are going to be forced to address this with the only realistic solution, and that is legalization of marijuana for all adults.
Well, la-di-frickin-da!
All right, everybody, it's 4:20 in the Mountain Time Zone. One of the legal states has its 420 right now. That's Colorado. In the next hour, we'll be celebrating in Oregon and Washington, the great Pacific Northwest, the home of the world's only shared legal weed border. We're back with Ethan Nadelman versus Kevin Sabet on CNN right after this.
420 Radio, turning red states and blue states green. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz. Green Stream Radio with Grandma Cat, Tim Mee, and On One from Olympia, Washington. Replaying Tuesdays at 11 Pacific on 420radio.org. Hey, tokers and tokettes, Radical Russ here for the Canador, a practical solution to keep herbs from drying. The Canador is the perfect airtight storage system for your fine herbs, from the half-inch thick walnut and cherry wood construction, clear-top perforated jars for storage, and the humidity bead system that keeps your herbs at a perfect 65% relative humidity. I keep all my herbs in the Canador, and you should too. Check out Canador.com for more information.
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belleville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
All right, welcome back, everyone. 22 after the hour, and I got to say, one of my heroes in drug law reform is Ethan Nadelman. He's the head of the Drug Policy Alliance, and as someone who makes a living doing public speaking, I got to tell you, there's a lot of people out there that I get a lot of inspiration from, and Ethan Nadelman is one of them. He makes such a clear, coherent, and entertaining argument for the legalization of drugs, it's impossible to resist. He had to go up against Kevin Sabet on CNN recently, and it really isn't much of a fair fight. Check this one out.
Of four states plus D.C. that have voted to legalize recreational marijuana, is it, and other states have it on the ballot, more states will have it on the ballot, is it inevitable?
I don't think it's inevitable. I actually think, you know, the reason why we're seeing the eroding support nationally, although we saw Oregon and Alaska, which were, you know, go for this.
Eroding support after 56%
saying,
well, in Oregon?
51% versus the Gallup poll saying 58% last year, as we all
Gallup
talk about.
The Gallup poll, as you know, is an outlier last year.
Let me finish, Ethan.
Hold on.
You
know,
have yourself speaking over this. Is that legalization, well, the Gallup just showed a 7% decline.
Look at that. Look at that number right there. 51-47.
That's right, and it was 40. It was 58% last year. And the reason you're seeing this reduced support is that actually legalization in theory sounds a lot better than in practice. In practice, it's about the gummy bears, the candies, the chocolates, these big manufacturers, as you just showed on your segment with this kind of big marijuana business. It's not about hippies smoking a joint now and then. I really could care less if a 50-year-old guy wants to smoke marijuana in the privacy of his own home. That's very different than what's going on in Colorado.
You just want to buy it illegally from criminals.
No, no, I don't care if he's grown to himself.
That's what you want.
What I don't want, though,
is the argument.
So you're happy with the gummy bears and the chocolates that are targeted towards kids in
Colorado? The Oregon voters.
Answer his question, though. No, no. What do you think of the edibles, like gummy bears and chocolates and all that?
They need to be better regulated. And what you see happening in Colorado and Washington right now are regulations to better control that.
But you're not having it better regulated because of the industry.
It's also a relatively new phenomenon. No, the industry actually has a pretty strong interest in regulating this stuff.
They have said no to every sensible thing.
The whole issue of the gummies and the edibles is going to become less and less of an issue. The vast majority of people who take marijuana in an edible form don't have a problem. The other thing is, unlike alcohol or opiates, you don't die of an overdose. It's not a good thing to overdose on an edible, but it's not dangerous.
Like, can't you die from marijuana, from a car crash, from falling off a building?
Yeah, but quite frankly, if you're on an edible, you're not driving. If you have too much edible, you're lying down. That's what you're doing.
I don't think that's what's happening.
Quite frankly, the interesting thing also is in Oregon and Alaska.
People drive.
In Oregon and Alaska, you saw the opposition you saw the opposition try to make something of this edibles argument, and the Oregonians looked at it and said, you know something, let's stop kidding around. Let's stop leaving underground. Why have illegal edibles as opposed to legal edibles? Why not tax it?
Because there weren't gummy bears before Colorado legalized, and the fact that actually Colorado's had a tripling, it's not a joke, in fatal car crashes with people high on marijuana.
And gummy bears are a modern, and they're a contemporary version of the old marijuana brownies. And most of us went to college. Remember having a little too much of an edible back then.
Why not stop at letting an adult smoke marijuana in the privacy of his home, or even grow his own, versus starting this commercial market? It's because there's a lot of money to be made in this, Don. This is about money. This is about creating another tobacco industry for a small number of people.
And you sound like more. This is more of a libertarian approach that you're talking about. Like, stay out of my home.
Yeah.
What I do in the privacy of my own home. Just don't target. Don't have gummy bears. Yeah. I eat a lot of gummy bears, and I'm, a man of a certain age.
But when the serving size is, do you eat one leg of a gummy bear, or do you have a whole bag?
You would no doubt like that these things would be labeled properly, that you would know the dose and the potency.
So what do we
under a prohibition model, that's not going to happen.
What do there isn't gummy bears
what
under
do we
prohibition
do?
Model.
Aren't we making this tough, though, because it's not legalized everywhere, right? And are we making it tough for employers and places that regulate?
The workplace issue is enormous. The issue about testing positive in the workplace, the safety issues, people saying, wait a minute, I smoked on Friday or night, now it's Monday.
You know, the interesting thing, though, these are the arguments that used to carry some weight. These aren't used to carry some weight. What you see is the vast majority of Americans who are now voting to legalize marijuana don't use marijuana.
They're voting to legalize.
And you know what else?
That's true.
You know what else? And the people who want to vote to legalize marijuana right now, right? They no more want their kids using marijuana than do the people who are opposed to it. The bottom line is we see a massive shift happening in American public opinion over the last 10 to 15 years. People are saying we wanted the cops focusing on real crime, not busting young people for marijuana. They're saying we want the government taxing and regulating it and using the tax revenue for things like education instead of the gangsters getting the money. That's the way. That's why 2 years from now, watch for California and other states to begin to legally regulate
these
this stuff
as well. These states are starting to legalize this in the last couple of years because also of because money. $9 million was pumped in. Oregon and California. $9 million. It did work for you. $9 million versus $400,000 in messaging. I think as we live with the consequences of legalization, Don, there will be a backlash that.
420 Radio. Tune in. Turn on. Get high. Lee Educated. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com.
Tokers, there's no good reason to get your dog stoned. While it might not harm them physically, imagine being a dog who already begs for treats all day, and then imagine that dog having the munchies. Not cool.
Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about 7 people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle who are on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. Available at areyouahypocrite.net. You can purchase the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, also available on iTunes. Check out Mara K. Eaton on Facebook as well. Learn more at areyouahypocrite.net. One of America's leading exports over the past 50 years has been the global war on drugs. Through UN treaties, we have bent the world to accept our marijuana prohibition. Learn how our allies in Europe are fighting for their freedom as we go across the pond.
Welcome back, everyone. 29 after the hour. And joining us today in Across the Pond, we've got a special guest, Michael Deegans. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but Michael Deegans from Belgium and the Mambo Social Club. Hello, Mr. Deegans. How are you?
Hello, Russ. I'm fine. Thank you very much. I hope you're doing well as well in the States over there.
Have I got your name right? Is it Michael?
Yes, it's pronounced Michelle Deegans.
Michelle Deegans. Okay, fantastic, yes. Michelle. Thank you for joining us on the show. And I got news of the Mambo Social Club and what's going on in Belgium. And I thought it was a really interesting story on how you guys there are navigating the laws with regard to cannabis. Tell folks some background on how the Mambo Social Club came to be.
The purpose for me for founding the Mambo Social Club was having access to good source of cannabis. I worked in a coffee shop for 6 years, and all my life, I'm a cannabis consumer for over 20 years. All my life, it was custom here that people went to the Netherlands, to Maastricht, for example. I live in the border region of Belgium, and for here, it's only a 20-minute drive to the Dutch coffee shops. Now, in 2012, all that changed with the weed pass that was introduced. New laws came into action in the Netherlands, and so I lost my job and also my source to cannabis.
Let's tell people a little bit about what that weed pass is, because maybe some folks here in the States don't exactly know what that means.
The weed pass, that was a pass that was invented in Maastricht, a city of the Netherlands, and it forbid coffee shops to sell cannabis to foreign customers.
Okay, and this is because geographically speaking, Maastricht is like in the southern tip of the Netherlands, and it's really close to Belgium and other countries, and they'd get a lot of what they called drug tourists, right?
Yes, there was a lot of this so-called drug tourism. But in Maastricht, the problem was more parking pressure, as we call it.
Oh.
Maastricht is a very small city, and with a lot of people coming there every day and a lot of people driving in and out, there was a lot of pressure on the parking system. And that's what got the local people upset, and that's what they experienced the most as a nuisance.
And you had
so that was. Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry, and you lost your job over this weed pass because they wouldn't allow foreigners to work in the coffee shops, or was that the reason?
No, the coffee shop where I worked, we had around 80 to 90% of foreign people. So Belgian people, German people, French people, English people, people from all over Europe. All that fell away when the weed pass was introduced, because Maastricht is a small city, and you had 14 coffee shops left to serve a small city. So, you know, that's if you're a bakery store and you're selling 10 breads and tomorrow you're only selling two, then you have a problem if you have to pay the wages of your workers and the rent for your building and everything, you know.
Okay. So losing the foreign access meant you lost so many customers. They had to lay people off and you were one of them.
Yes, I was one of them.
Okay.
And that was then also the reason to start out with the social club. At that time, we had a social club in Antwerp. I never heard, I don't know if you heard about Trek du Plant. They're the first Belgian social club, and it was founded by Joep Omen from NCOT. They were operating for 5 or 6 years at that time. Hmm. And the story really, really spoke to me. And I got in touch with them, and we started out as a local, as a regional branch of their social club, and we operated like that for a year. And then after a year, we were strong enough to start up with our own coffee shop, social club, I mean. Then we founded the Mambo Social Club. And so we grew into it in a way from a regional division of the first social club into what we are having today, the social club with around 80 members at the moment.
All right. So you've got the Mambo Social Club operating independently since about April of 2013. So over a year and a half now that you guys have been in operation. And I'm interested in how it's possible to operate. Is marijuana legal in Belgium? I understand it's not. So how do you work around the law in this situation?
We don't really work around the law. We work inside a very small space at the law office in Belgium. In Belgium, it's forbidden to possess cannabis, but we have a ministerial directive, and that states that as an adult, you can possess up to 3 grams or 1 plant. If this is without public nuisance or without disturbance, then they only can make up a simplified statement of you. So it's more or less the same like if you get caught with driving your bike without a light. So they can only write down your name, and the substances that are found in your possession can stay in your possession.
Wow.
And that makes possible that we are doing what we're doing today, that directive.
Yeah.
It's not a law.
Right.
So it's still open for interpretation, and it's still a gray area. That's
right.
Also, yeah.
So this is somewhat like here in the States. Of course, we got 4 of our U.S. states that have passed legalization laws. It's still federally illegal, but the feds have issued this memo, this directive of guidance as to what they'll go after. It sounds kind of similar. It just sounds like the city there the city in this respect has said, if it's a little amount, we'll keep track of who you are. We'll write your name down. But this, I mean, here in America, they'd take your weed. They wouldn't let you keep your weed. So you got it better than us in that respect.
I must say, Russ, that in my experience, they take the weed here as well.
Oh, they do. Okay. So that was in theory we were talking about before. Okay.
Yes. In theory, they don't have the right to do what they did, but they did it anyway.
Okay. And so what's happening now? I understand that you have a situation where, you know, of course, if one person can carry 3 grams and have 1 plant, that's fine. But if you have a social club, at some point, there's going to be many grams and many plants. What's the latest for you on that?
Yes. So that it wouldn't be safe for us to have the people collect their plant at our growing operation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wouldn't be good for the security of the growers, and it would make a lot of practical problems. So that's the weak point in the social, the technical weak point is that somebody has to take the risk and carry the harvest to the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened to me last December 28th. Last December 18th, I was stopped on my way to the distribution of the club. And in my possession, I had 1,100 grams of cannabis, and that was divided into 60 portions, and that was ready for distribution to 60 of our members. Oh. And those were members that had been waiting on that plant for 3 months, among them also sick people.
Wow. So 1.1 kilograms of cannabis, then, if I'm doing my metric correctly.
Yes, that's you're doing that correctly, Rod. it's amount the average amount would be 18 grams and a bit per person, and that's what people had to wait for 3 months.
Okay, so we're like where the directive said a person could have 3 grams. This was about 18 per person, but that would be for, you know, 6 periods of time. You know, you're not going to keep 3 grams forever.
Yes, but it wasn't 18 grams. It was a part of 1 plant.
Oh,
because the directive says 1 plant or 3 grams.
Ah.
So when we distribute the plant, we also distribute the leaves and the sticks of the plant together with it, so the people can prove they're not carrying 18 grams of cannabis, but they're carrying a cannabis plant.
Gotcha. Okay. So this is one of those results of the harvest sort of situations where, hey, if you allow us to have a plant, you can't bust us for then harvesting it. That seems to be what your argument would be.
Yes, and if you would see how it works in practice, Russ, it's kind of a slapstick thing. If I can make a comparison with alcohol, you have to imagine that somebody is gonna brew some beer for the club. and everybody's waiting eagerly 3 months until the beer is brewed, and then we all have to gather in a place, and then the guy who brewed the beer gets in with a crate of beer. Everybody quickly gets one bottle, has to tuck it under their coats, and have to go back home.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's a crazy situation. We hope to be able to get out in the open more, but at the moment we're still not in a situation like in Spain where we can really gather and smoke and light up together, you know. Mm-hmm. That would be a great dream, but the members of the Mambo Social Club never had the possibility or the liberty to spark up together and to really, really socialize.
Yeah. We're speaking with Michel Deegans from the Mambo Social Club in Belgium, and I understand you're facing trial tomorrow on this. Do you have some contact information if people want to help support you in any way?
Tomorrow we're standing trial, and in about 8 hours from now, I'm standing trial. People can support us. It's always nice to get some support or kind words through Facebook or Twitter, but to actually do something to try to alter the course of what's gonna happen, I think we're a little bit too late for that. Mm. But I must say, my American friend and great writer, Doug Fine, has done a lot for us, and he's been a great help into getting our message out into the world.
Mm. Yes, Doug's a contributor to our show, and we really appreciate him bringing your story to our attention so we could tell people about it, because everybody's got to realize it's more than just a struggle in the United States and Canada. It's all throughout the world, and so many different laws and treaties and such that we have to deal with. And we appreciate everyone who's fighting for this and finding a way to get the plant to the people who really need it. Michel Deegans from the Mambo Social Club in Belgium. Just Google Mambo Social Club Belgium and you'll find their Facebook and all of that information. That's how I found you guys. And Michel, thank you so much for joining us on the show, and thank you especially for staying up so late to join us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me, Russ. Also, thank you for your interest, and I would like to express my thankness and also in name of all the members for your support. It's very nice to know that the drug war is being won globally, and that we can count on your support and also the support of your listeners.
Absolutely. Thank you. We'll have this interview posted on the Radical Russ YouTube channel. If you'd like a copy of that, just log on, embed it, share it, however you like. Michel Deegans, thanks for joining us. When we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant on the inhumanity of American incarceration. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, the world's voice of marijuana legalization.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs. We've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org. When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
Handle the truth.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
You have offended my family.
Hey, this is great, man.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
I know nothing.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
We don't need no stinking budget.
Homosexuality.
How in the century you have slurred the meaning of the words, we, the people.
Be warned, this is not your mother's marijuana.
You could ask yourself a question, do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, 45 after the hour, and today the rant is inspired by a story written by Radley Balco. It's up on the Washington Post in The Watch, and it's entitled The Inhumanity of How We Incarcerate. Got the link posted up in our chat room if you'd like to follow along. It begins with the story of a man killed by the North Carolina prison system. Michael Anthony Kerr spent the last 5 days of his life handcuffed in a prison cell, unresponsive, off his mental health medication, and lying in his feces and urine. An hour or two before the former Army sergeant died, officials at Alexander Correctional Institution put him into a wheelchair and drove him 2.5 hours east to a prison hospital in Raleigh. When Kerr, age 53, arrived at Central Prison, his body was cold. Somewhere between Taylorsville and Raleigh, as the prison vehicle passed emergency rooms at 8 hospitals, Kerr died of dehydration. Brenda Lyles, his sister, said, quote, "They treated him like a dog," end quote. The story gives some background on Kerr, explaining that circumstances in the man's life certainly broke him. Kerr was born in Sampson County in southeastern North Carolina in 1960 to a family of 6 boys and 6 girls. He joined the Army in 1979, serving in an artillery unit. After an honorable discharge in 1991 from Fort Sill, he sold real estate in Lawton, Oklahoma, and was pastor of the Faith Temple Church. While an intensely religious man, he began getting in trouble with the law in 1995, with a string of larceny convictions, and served 10 months in prison. Lyles, his sister, said Kerr began falling apart after 2 of his sons were murdered in Sampson County. Anthony Kerr in Harrell's in May 2007, and Gabriel Kerr in a Garland juke joint in June 2008. That's when he began to have those nervous breakdowns, Lyles said. He had 2 or 3. In prison, Kerr was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, a condition in which the person experiences schizophrenia symptoms such as delusions or hallucinations, as well as mood disorders such as mania or depression. Prison officials put Kerr into solitary confinement in February. For several weeks, guards observed him standing, sitting, or sleeping, according to a prison log. Sometimes he lay on the floor singing. At other times, he kicked, banged, or pecked on his cell door. On 4 occasions, he plugged up his sink to flood the cell, and guards periodically cut the water off. He was held in full restraints or handcuffs for days at a time. So, we have a man who's put into prison, clearly mentally ill, and the state of North Carolina doesn't give him any treatment, doesn't provide him with mental health medication, and puts him in solitary confinement. And then when he acts out as, I mean, come on, the guy's schizoaffective, he's going to act out. They put him in cuffs, they chain him down, and they turn off his water. And then the guy dies of dehydration. Now, the state of North Carolina doesn't particularly like the attention of having an inmate die of dehydration. But they're very, very, very reluctant to let anyone outside of their little circle do any investigation. This, again, from the News Observer story in North Carolina. The State Department of Public Safety has released almost no information to the public on Kerr's March 12th death. Secretary of Public Safety Frank Perry declined to discuss the facts of the case, but said he called in the State Bureau of Investigation to look into the death. Other state agencies have faced obstacles investigating the case. An agent for the State Bureau of Investigation had to get a court order to obtain Kerr's records. As the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner conducted an autopsy, prison officials' help was so minimal that the pathologist could not determine the manner of death, accident, suicide, or homicide. Days after the autopsy was released and the lack of cooperation became public, the U.S. attorney in Raleigh opened a grand jury investigation of the death. Folks, in America, our prisons have become our de facto mental health wards. I'm old enough to remember, I was a teenager, but I'm old enough to remember when Ronald Reagan shut down most of what was our mental health treatment facilities in this country. Shut down the money to treat these people with treatable mental illnesses. And these people with mental illnesses, of course, often end up homeless because, as my wife is fond of saying, when you see the guy on the street corner pushing a garbage or pushing a shopping cart full of garbage, having a conversation with the telephone pole, he's not exactly the most employable person on the street. So these people end up homeless, they end up unemployed, and eventually end up committing some sort of crime that leads them into the criminal justice system. And from there, they end up with public defenders, very little support, very little help, unable to defend themselves. They end up in prison, where prison guards make lousy psychiatrists. This is not an isolated incident. You may recall the story of Darren Rainey. He was a mentally ill inmate in Florida. And as he acted up and he would, you know, shit all over the place, piss all over the place, wipe it all over the place, right? To punish him, the guards there in Florida locked him in a scalding hot shower. His skin was boiled off his bones. There was also allegations by former employees that the Dade County facility that allowed that to happen made a sport of brutalizing the mentally ill. There's the case of Jerome Murdo, who died of heat exposure when he was left unattended for hours in a cell at Rikers Island in the mentally ill ward. Despite the fact that the prison officials at Rikers knew there was a heating unit malfunction that was raising the temperature in the cells to dangerously high levels. There's the case of Christopher Lopez, a schizophrenic man in Colorado, who suffered two seizures and died on the floor of his prison cell while guards allegedly mocked and laughed at him. They waited a year and a half before they even bothered to report his death. We have seen so many in-custody deaths recently that are exposing the shoddy prison conditions and the shocking mental and medical health treatment that we're allowing to happen in America. Cases in Maine, San Diego, Florida, Louisville, Alaska, California, in Pennsylvania, among other places, that include Cook County, Illinois, Orleans Parish, Louisiana, upstate New York, Idaho, and Mississippi. We've got allegations where prison guards are staging gladiatorial combat, staged fights and competitions between the inmates, contests that the guards would call, quote, the retard Olympics, end quote. So it gives you some idea how inured and how much these guards have in the way of compassion toward the mentally ill and how much they just accept the brutality toward prisoners as run of the mill. And to some respect, paint that as what's appropriate. And you know, who's to blame them when we look at how we as a society think of prison? We just accept violence in prison. We just accept rape in prison. Prison rape is a standard throwaway sitcom joke in this country. There was actually a prison rape joke in SpongeBob SquarePants, people. That's how accepting we are of it. And we think of it as, well, that's just part of the punishment. Prison shouldn't be a great place to be, right? So, if you're afraid of getting raped by Bubba in the shower or beaten up by the Aryan Nation gang or whatever, well, that's just part of the prison. We don't want them to enjoy prison. To the point where people wish this. They wish this on people. Well, I sure hope he doesn't drop the soap when he goes to prison, goes to the big house. That's just abominable in this country. And to see it reflected from the county and city jail level all the way to the top echelons of our Department of Defense and our Executive Department countenancing torture in our names and extraordinary renditions in our names, it's no surprise that prisoners get treated this way in this country. We've got more humanity. We've got more compassion for a dog left in a car on a hot day in a mall parking lot than we do for a human being locked in a prison cell. And that's a very sad indictment of this country and our values, our supposedly Christian nation values. For every person out there who calls themselves a Christian, and I don't number myself in that group, but for those of you who do, I seem to recall some quote about how you treat the least of these, so you are treating me, as said by Jesus. Well, if that's the case, Jesus ain't going to be very happy about how we've been treating the least of these. Now, I know some people get in this, don't be soft on crime. What do we want to give them? Cable television and Barca loungers and blah, 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 blah. No. But I also believe that cages for human beings should be reserved as a last resort for those people that if they were not in a cage, they would cause harm to other people. There is so much about our incarceration in this country, this mass incarceration, that we need to get over in this country. And there's so many elements of our society that are against it, from the corporations that make use of cheap 17 cents an hour prison labor that basically makes up for the lack of slave labor in this country, that this country was founded on, that this empire was built upon. From that level to the cable news networks that run lockup, lockout, prison, cops, whatever the hell the show is that I don't watch, hour after hour after hour, that make it normal, make it seem regular for us to be living in this police state. There is so much to uncover in this. And I firmly believe that this police industrial complex, this prison industrial complex, whatever you want to call it, cannot be sustained without the prohibition on marijuana. And that's why we continue to see, despite all evidence, all science, all common sense to the contrary, so many people in positions of power still holding on to the idea of prohibiting something far safer than alcohol. Without the easy arrests and that constant flow of marijuana users, there's not enough profit in prisons, in policing, in asset forfeiture to make it worth their while. And that's why they're so desperately afraid of the momentum we've got now with marijuana legalization. You know, a lot of people ask, you know, gosh, with so much support for legalization, how come the politicians aren't coming around? Well, folks, it's because
This is a country of we the people, a country that's of the people, by the people, and for the people. The problem is, corporations are people, my friend, and their money is free speech. The corporate people don't like legalization so much, and their free speech, up to now, has been a lot louder than ours. All that's changing, and we're glad to be a part of it here at 420 Radio. Thanks for joining us, folks. That's all the time we got for Hour 1, but stay tuned for Hour 2. Toker Talk Radio is next. I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.